It's the Congressional Corner with Sean Patrick Maloney. Sean, you've been there for a while now, since 2013. What's it like to be a senior congressman?
Well, I don't know if I'm a senior yet, but I am a sophomore. And look, you know, you try to build capacity in this job by doing the right stuff, by developing relationships, by, you know, getting smart on how it works down there. I'm pretty proud to say we've passed about 20 plus bills into law in my first 3 years in Congress. We had 5 pieces of legislation alone that became law as part of the big highway and infrastructure bill, things to make our trains safer, and, you know, get more dollars on local bridge construction and other good things. So, you know, you get better as you go, hopefully.
What are some of your best moves, your techniques?
Well, you mean besides, you know, always doing the Congressional Corner with Alan Chardon?
Look,
here's the number one thing. There's people in Washington who want to cooperate, and there's people who want to fight. I mean, there's people who want to give speeches on the House floor and, you know, and try to score political points, and then there's people who want to get something done. And I hope people know me well enough to know that I'm somebody who wants to get things done. And so, you know, working with Chris Gibson and others, we passed very significant Lyme disease legislation. I have, you know, because we have a terrible Lyme disease problem here in the Hudson Valley. You know, that's how you get things done, is working across the aisle when you're, you know, relatively junior and you're in the minority. So I could not have passed 20 bills, you know, helping our veterans, getting infrastructure built here locally, doing good things for the community if I wasn't working across the aisle. So that's probably the single smartest thing I've done since I got there, is find partners to work with. You know, we got a major commuter tax break reinstalled for people who will now have lower commuting costs because Pete King, a Republican, and I got together and got it included, you know, in a larger bill that was moving. So that's how it works.
So let me ask you this. It seems to me there's danger for both Republicans and Democrats who do that. We know that the Republicans have said, we don't want to cooperate with Obama. We don't want to cooperate with the Democrats. Just to hell with them. So don't they get criticized for doing this kind of thing?
Yeah, look, you've got a lot of people who are in districts where they get rewarded for fighting. You know, I'm not one of them. I mean, one of the things people should know is that because my congressional district is very competitive, you know, it's a razor-thin kind of margin. It's gone back and forth between the parties. You know, someone who's going to hold this seat for more than a couple of years has to be getting results and has to be working in a bipartisan fashion. So, you know, I think there's a lot of people in Congress that have the incentive to just play games, and that's why we need, you know, nonpartisan redistricting. So all these seats are competitive. We have too many comfortable, safe members of Congress. Everybody ought to be on their toes, and they ought to be worried about losing their job.
Well, don't you criticize Andrew Cuomo for having said in his initial election that he wanted to stop that stuff, allowing them to draw their own districts? And he sort of reneged on that, didn't he?
Well, not in the sense that we did have it done in a nonpartisan way. I mean,
well,
it was done in the courts, but, you know, the districts in New York were done by a neutral third party, you know, in this case a federal judge. And if you look at the results, we have, you know, 6 or 7 competitive districts in New York, which is far more than most states. Mine's one of them.
But that wasn't Andrew Cuomo's
district, just north of me, be very competitive as well.
But that wasn't Andrew Cuomo's doing, you know, I mean, because don't forget we have a state legislature which still is allowed to draw its own lines. That's just wrong, don't you think?
Yeah, but I don't know why you'd blame the governor for the legislature not getting its act together. I mean, the fact of the matter is that was their job, and they flinched on it. So because they didn't get it done, the court did it. What I'm telling you is the result is what the governor was prepared to do, you know, had the legislature acted, which is we got a largely nonpartisan process in New York. We could do more, but, you know, as far as states go, you know, at least ours wasn't done in some back room, you know, with some deals being cut between the parties to protect, you know, one party in the Senate and another party in the Assembly. That could have happened, and it didn't in New York.
Well,
so that's better than a lot of states.
Well, Sean, we could duke this one out for, you know, a long time. I just think
I don't know why you're hating on the governor, Alan. I think the guy's doing a pretty good job.
What am I hating? Hating is a tough word. I don't hate him, but I am critical in many ways.
Well, I don't know why you'd pick. Let me put it this way: I don't know why you'd pick this thing to beat up on the governor for. I think the governor doesn't get enough credit.
Only
the governor's done some very good things.
Only because you started it, as I used to say to my brother, you started it.
You're talking to somebody who's the last of five brothers, so
you started.
I know
it.
About that.
Okay, so let's move on. You talked about some of the achievements you've had. One of the ones I want to talk about, because it seems to have really gotten out of hand, is the heroin epidemic. What's the deal?
Right. Oh, well, you know, I think by now everybody's realized what a terrible problem we have. When I first took office, there were a lot of disbelief about this. We buried a lot of people, a lot of young people in particular. It's a horrible thing, and it has to do with over-prescribing prescription drugs, which gets a lot of people hooked on opioids in the first place. People need to really understand if their kid is going on Percocet or Vicodin or some other opioid. You've got to really make sure you don't get more pills than you need. You've got to really control how much they take, and keep an eye on that, and then get rid of whatever extra medicine you have through one of these pill give-back programs or some other way. Don't leave this stuff lying around in your house. And then on heroin, we've seen this stuff flooding in. It's cheap. It's deadly. You know, I'm working very hard on this. I have two pieces of legislation that I think will make a difference, one that will allow Narcan to be used more widely and without a prescription. That's the drug that will save a person's life who is overdosing from heroin. It will literally stop an overdose in its tracks. So we've done a lot of work to get that in the hands of first responders and family members who may be the ones who are there and can save a life if they have access to it. I have a new piece of legislation that I'm very excited about that I'm working, again, in a bipartisan fashion on with Richard Hanna from Central New York that will allow the Justice Department to fund what we call pre-booking diversion programs so that if somebody comes in with their drugs, if they are discovered by police or known to police, the police have the option of bringing that person directly to treatment as opposed to having to first arrest them and then hope to divert them to a drug court. It's much more efficient, it's much more effective, and it's modeled on programs like the one in Gloucester, Massachusetts, and what's called the LEAD program, which stands for Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion in Seattle. They've just announced a program like this in Albany, Alan, that you may be familiar with, and it has great promise to allow police to get these folks off the streets, particularly people who are engaged in street-level prostitution and other things to try to pay for drug habits and to get them the help they need without trying to use the criminal justice system, which just isn't working.
Is there any resistance to this?
You know, no, because, and I should say, we have the support of the police. We have the support. I just had a meeting for my colleagues in Washington, and people as diverse as John Katko from Syracuse, a Republican, former federal prosecutor, member of Congress now, Dan Donovan from Staten Island, another Republican and a former prosecutor, you know, came, and we had a very good conversation about this. Richard Hanna, the Republican, is co-sponsoring it with me, because we're talking about people that have small amounts of drugs and that are not dealing. We're not talking about people who are the bad guys and who are the criminal elements who are engaged in violent crime. We're talking about people who have small amounts of drugs, maybe selling a small amount to support their own habit or engaged in things like shoplifting or street-level prostitution to support a habit. We can take a pre-booking approach to that, meaning right now the cops who know a lot of these people because they're sleeping in the parks and they're down at the train station, they know who they are. Right now their choices are ignore it, or, you know, arrest them and book them. Sometimes people have been booked 10, 20, 30 times. It doesn't do any good. It costs us all a ton of money. And so by having a pre-booking diversion program, we can give the cops an option. And like I say, the Fraternal Order of Police is going to support my legislation. We're working closely with law enforcement. It will give them an option to get low-level drug offenders into treatment. And that we know will work. And then, you know, I'm also working to increase the resources for local treatment and prevention programs. We just brought about $600,000 back to a program in Port Jervis. We've done a lot of work with programs in Putnam County and in Orange County. You know, it has to be a wall-to-wall approach, and it really starts with families and parents talking to their kids. People got to know this stuff is deadly. It will kill you. It's not a joke. We've got to get heroin out of our communities.
All right. We've been talking to Sean Patrick Maloney. Sean, thanks for coming around and understanding why we have to have you tell everybody what you think.
Thank you, Alan. It's always a pleasure to be with you.